You're listening to the Fat Dude Digs Flicks Movie Podcast Network. What is up, everybody? This is Andy, the resident fat dude of Fat Dude Digs Flicks, coming to you recorded from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and it is time for an all-new episode of Let's Talk About. If this is your first time here, welcome. Thanks for listening. Let's Talk About is an interview show where I am joined by a guest to talk about their life, their loves, and a movie that has had an impact on them. This month, things are a little bit different. I kind of had a list of movies in mind. It is a list of movies that is playing at my favorite local movie theater, the State Theater here in Sioux Falls, that I have helped curate. It is the Movies You Should See series. This month there will be two Criterion Break episodes, and this is the second of my Let's Talk About episodes. I feel incredibly lucky to have had the opportunity to do this series. And I gotta say, like, I kind of hope somewhere down the road I can do it again. But I'm just super stoked that this one has come to fruition and is doing okay. It's doing a couple of the movies are doing okay. And I will keep my fingers crossed that the final week goes well. But so let's dig into this week's episode. This week I am joined by local actress and podcast host of the Never Seen It podcast. I'm joined by Betsy Gorham, and we're going to talk about the movie The Professional from Luc Besson, starring Jean Reno, Natalie Portman, and Gary Oldman. A great, great movie, so let's not waste any time. Let's dive right into it. So go ahead and grab your popcorn, grab a soft drink, kick back, relax, and let's talk about The Professional. All right, everyone. I think I say this every time I have a guest on that's like not part of my immediate circle of friends, that I'm always excited to have somebody on that I know of but don't like know. You know what I mean? Where it's like you know this person exists, you know of them, you kind of like you see things that they do, and you're like, oh, that person looks cool, but you don't know them. Well, today is my chance and your chance to get to know local actress, local podcaster from Never Seen It? Holy cow. I feel like a dummy. Never Seen It podcast. Betsy Gorham. Betsy, sorry for completely, like, my brain just spaced out your podcast name there for a second.
Awesome, you got host. Nailed it.
Nailed it. Nobody will ever know. No, I don't edit anything. So Betsy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. So we were kind of chatting a little bit before we hit record here, but it's like the way a theater community works, like in a small city or something, is like you'll be friends with people and they'll know these other people who they do shows with, but you won't know them. And I think you said that we share like a ridiculous amount of mutual friends, but
there's a lot of crossover.
Right? And it's just, I think it's finally time for us to become friends and have a conversation. So Betsy, it's great to meet you.
Well, it's great to meet you, and be careful what you wish for.
No, I know, right?
You're going to be, like, oh, see, crap. I'm invested. Once I latch on to friends, like that's it.
That's
We're
right.
doing this. We're friends forever now.
you're stuck with me now. Well, Betsy, I'm going to kick things off with the question that I start off with everybody. And that's, Betsy, who are you? Where did you come from? What is your origin story?
Oh, the smallest question to begin.
I know.
Yeah, I was born and raised right here in South Dakota. I'm originally from Del Rapids, so not too far from where we're recording this. I have five siblings. And I come from a theater family. So I always joke in our family, you were born and handed a guitar and said, out, go, do it.
Yeah.
Because my grandparents met in the choir, my parents met in the theater. So it's kind of always in our DNA where we've at least tried it, some more than others. I have one brother who majored in acting. And, you know, obviously, you know me from theater in Sioux Falls. And I'm a more of a dabbler than he is.
Sure.
But yeah, I grew up around here. I went to school in Wisconsin, and then after college came back here and just kind of been here ever since. And when Goodnight started up, I said, that I want to do that.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yeah. So what, when you went to college, what was your like pursuit? Was it for the arts? Was it for theater, or was it for something like completely different, but yet you can't really shake that the theater in your blood and then the love for it?
So I picked a school out of state specifically because I just felt like I had grown up and stayed very close to home, and I wanted to go to a school where I didn't know anybody and I didn't know anything. I didn't know what I was going to school for. I ultimately didn't declare until they finally were like, hey, it's your junior year and you can't take any more classes if you don't declare a major.
Yeah.
And ultimately, weirdly enough, I was a classic civ major, which is, you know, just a very regionally specific version of history. It's a fancy way of saying I was a history major. Yeah. But I had a performing arts minor, and I just sort of fell into both of those things. It was just, I feel like taking that class, and I feel like taking this class. Yeah. And I try, like, the weirdest thing is, and people don't believe me when I say this, I auditioned for choirs, I auditioned for plays, and I was not cast in basically anything. So I had the passion, but I never quite made the cut. And I had several people say, oh, you were so close. You were so close. I just one more person get out of your way and you'd have got it. And I'm like, okay, well, why not just pick me?
Yeah. If I keep hearing that, whose legs do I need to break so that I can have that?
So it's something I've just always wanted to do. And I was always okay just being friends with all the theater people. But I've always kind of had that itch where it's like, ooh, I'd like to try out for that show. And if I get in, great. And if I don't, great.
Yeah. So was it because of the like theater people in your lineage? Is that how you could stomach being friends with theater people? Because we are a weird bunch. Like, we really are. Like, we're just such an odd group of people. Wonderful.
Wonderful people. Like, best people.
But they're a lot. We're weird. We're weird. So how is it that you kind of like, I mean, is that what kind of like made you feel connected to befriending and spending time with theater people?
Oh, yeah. Before I was ever in theater, I would go to rehearsal with my parents. They would do like kind of summer theater. And so I got to see all of the actors who were in the shows with them being just ridiculous and hearing all the jokes that, you know, pranks people were playing on each other backstage, things like that. And we like would go with the other kids who also got dragged because their parents were in rehearsal. And we would just learn the songs. Like, if they did a musical, we learned the songs, we learned the choreography just through osmosis. And then in between we would get up there. So to say, how do you stomach it? It's like, no, I was born into it, buddy.
It is
in my blood, and it's something I just kind of always did. And to paint you a picture, there would be moments in our house where I have a distinct memory in college when the song Stacy's Mom was really popular.
Yeah.
I had it stuck in my head and I started singing it. And two of my brothers started singing it with me, and we're doing like all the parts in three-part harmony. And we did the whole song, big finish. And we all just parted ways and acted like it never happened.
Yep.
So that's kind of how I grew.
God. Like, I just, I'm instantly teleported back to my, like, college theater hallway of, mm-hmm. like, you know, somebody gets a song stuck in their head. And theater people, we can't keep that song in our head. It has to come out. Like, yeah, we have to sing it.
It drives my husband, who is not a theater person, a little crazy when he has to ask me like three times, and he's like, please, will you just please? Right. Like, okay, I'll stop. I'll try really hard. I'm not doing it on purpose, I promise.
Oh, it's just like there's that extra like gene or something where it's like that you can't internalize these little things. You just have to let it out. And it's like, you know, just the weirdest like little dramatic gestures, or you're thinking something in your head that you have to say, and you have to say it a certain way, and you can't just say it in your brain. You have to hear what it sounds like out loud.
Oh, and you get looks, and I'm like, uh-huh. I've kind of desensitized myself to it. It's just like, fine, you just don't get me.
Yeah. Right. Oh man. It's just all I can say is theater people. Like, I love them. I love them. And I still feel like I haven't done a show in a while, but I still feel like if I went back, everything would just come flooding right back. Like, it would just be like, oh, there it is. Yep. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to be weird too. This is here we go. Let's do this. But yeah, it's such a weird but wonderful community of people who are just like accepting of pretty much everyone, and like they try and make everything feel like a family. And I think that's one of the reasons why theater has always been something super important to me. So when you go and you're a kid and you're sitting in on these rehearsals, does watching like musical rehearsals and stuff, does that kind of like help entertain an interest in movies, like movie musicals as well? Is that something that you grew up on, or was it more just stage musicals?
I would say it's both. You know, being a kid from the 80s, we were the first generation that got hit hardcore with just the accessibility of you could just have movies at home. You can rent them and you can own them. And we had all of the old like Rodgers and Hammerstein classics. I don't know how many times I've seen The Sound of Music.
Sure.
And so, yeah, there was a little bleed over between the two where I would, you know, see the musical that my parents were in, and then I'd see that movie, or vice versa. So I'd be, even in my tender like childhood, be like, well, that's not how it is in the movie. They changed that.
Yep. There's always that weird, like, it's the weirdest kind of mix of feelings, because it's like, oh, cool, I get to see a movie version of this. And then there's the, why didn't they do it this way? Like, it's a weird kind of joy and sadness all thrown in it at the same time.
And you can't turn it off.
Nope. And it's the same way with books. Like, if there's a book that you read and you love, you know, if you get to see this book on the big screen and it's super exciting, but if they forget that one part that you might have been super connected to reading it, it's just it's like everything was worthless.
You know, or if the adaptation is just not the same, it's not good. We did the Da Vinci Code not that long ago, and I just kind of did it as a social experiment, because Trent has not read the book.
Okay.
So I wanted to see what he thought of just the movie by itself.
Yeah.
Like, just, you don't know anything about the book. What do you feel about the movie? And when a guy like that still doesn't like the movie, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah. And it's tough too, because it's like, it's Tom Hanks. Like, how do you,
all the parts.
Right. How do you not like a Tom Hanks movie? And the Dan Brown adaptations are just difficult to watch.
Just say it. They're garbage. And even I had the thought, maybe this would be better as a TV show. And then I suddenly remembered they tried a TV show. Mm. And even that is garbage.
Oh, no.
The Peacock. There's a Peacock TV show that I totally forgot. And it only came out and just like crashed and burned like a year ago.
Oh, God. gosh.
Short-lived.
Oof. Yeah, that's too bad. That's too bad. And some of those things are just meant to, you know, stay on the page because that's where it's, you know, your mind can make it up and that's good enough. You don't need, mm-hmm. you don't need to see a screen version of it. This is kind of a good way to kind of slowly transition into our movie conversation. Where did your love of movies come early on, or like the name of the podcast is Never Seen It, and that means that there's somebody there between the two of you who have not seen a particular movie, or yeah. you know, had that gumption behind it. The way to start the podcast is with that idea. So were you a movie lover from a young age, and then there are just some, you know, parts of your knowledge that you weren't able to fill in, or kind of what's the starting point for your love for movies?
I cannot remember a time in my life where I wasn't kind of at least low key obsessed with movies. Mm-hmm. Like I was thinking about this question because it's like I've listened to your podcast. I know the things he's going to ask me, yeah. And I was just trying to think back, and I can remember like having a very distinct memory when I was 5 years old. My favorite movie was The Wizard of Oz. Sure. And I had like a VHS copy and it broke. And I don't know, I cannot remember if it was like recorded off television or it was an actual copy, but it was broken. And every single year I asked for a copy of it. I wanted it replaced. I asked every year until I was 20 years old.
Oh no.
And I finally got it, and the joy on my face. So yeah, even by the time I was 5, I knew a movie that I liked, mm-hmm. and I needed it. Like I yeah. couldn't just go and rent it. That was not acceptable. I needed right. to watch it when I wanted to watch it. And like my parents were among like the first wave of people, I think, to get a VCR. Yes, mm-hmm. they were expensive in those days, but with 6 children, all yeah. there's, and to give you some context, it's 6 kids within 7 years.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of very young, loud children simultaneously.
Yeah.
And sometimes the rescue is just put on the movie. Just mm-hmm. put it on, sit over there, do it. You know, I do not fault any parents who want to go down that road. I was one of those kids, and it made the peace. Like it yeah. just maintained the peace. So they had, you know, like old classic movies. It was stuff that my parents liked. So my dad always loved Cary Grant. Okay. So we had a whole bunch of like Cary Grant movies.
Sure.
He had some John Wayne movies, which I weirdly never watched. I don't know. Yeah. I didn't have that curiosity.
You're okay.
And then like the musicals, and my grandparents both had a collection of movies,
yeah.
and it was their kind of taste, like whatever they were into. And then it began like the Disney like renaissance of the late 80s, early 90s. We had mm-hmm. The Little Mermaid and Aladdin and all of those movies. And then it just kind of kept building from there, where yeah. I just had a curiosity. And as I got into like middle school, I would go to my grandma's and look for a movie that I hadn't watched, as opposed to the one that we watched until it wore out.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were really lucky in Del Rapids. We had a video rental place in a town awesome. With, at the time, probably 2,000 people. There mm-hmm. was just this older couple that opened a video store. And you could go in and get whatever you wanted. And it was usually something terrible, but we didn't know it was terrible at the time. I can't tell you how many times as a kid we rented Mac and Me.
Oh, sure.
And yeah, so it's just sort of built and built and built upon that. And then it suddenly turned into, hey, you know, there's the library has movies and I could mm-hmm. get more movies there. And it was just figuring out, who can I borrow movies from and who can show me something that my parents won't let me watch?
Yeah.
And figuring out what friends had what, and, you know, let's put that on at the slumber party. And yeah, it's just eaten away at me until it wore me down and it became just, you know, a mild obsession.
Yeah. Oh, I totally get that. Like, it's just because my story feels somewhat similar to that. Is like, you know, we had a VCR very early on, you know, I can remember back 1984, because I think that's when Purple Rain came out. And I remember that we went to a video store and I saw Purple Rain on video. I shouldn't have. Like, I was way too young to appreciate Purple Rain at that time. I just knew it was Prince. I liked the music. So I would play, you know, the songs on there and then probably not pay attention to the movie. But, like, you kind of, like, you open the doors to this whole world. And I almost feel, I know that with streaming, we definitely have that. But it feels so different because there was this sense of discovery. Like when you go into a video store mm-hmm. and you're looking at the covers and it's like you get captivated by that piece of art. And that's where it's like, oh, this looks interesting. I'm going to watch it. And it might be terrible, but let's talk about the cover art for Mac and Me and how how interesting that is, especially to a little kid.
To like a child, got, yeah.
Right? Like you've got an alien and a little boy, and it's like, oh, okay, I liked E.T. I'm sure I'm going to love this one too. And, you know, opinions may vary.
We still have some references, some specific things from that movie that will bubble up from time to time in my family. But yeah, I think that's where my need for the tangible media comes from. Mm-hmm. Like I realize we live in this modern age where I can go to 20 different streaming services and get almost everything. But that's the thing. It's not everything.
Yeah.
Trent keeps trying to get me to whittle down my collection of, you know, hundreds of discs. And I'm like, but what if I like, what if the hard drive fails or what if it isn't streaming? Like, no, I won't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. What if they somehow decide not to carry it in the cloud anymore? Like, what am I going to do if this movie is not available anymore? I completely understand and completely relate because I have a very large physical media collection.
and some stuff has never made the leap to the next thing. So it's like, I have a DVD and that's all I'm going to get. I bought a DVD last week because I was like, I want it and I can't get it. So I'm buying it.
I did that a couple of weeks ago with the movie Cocoon, Ron Howard movie, Steve Guttenberg. Like I remember loving that movie as a little kid and I have never seen it on Blu-ray or definitely not 4K and it's not streaming anywhere. But Last Stop CD Shop had the DVD of it. And I was just like, you know, as much as I want to have the most modern version of everything, I can't have this any other way. And so it's just like, you know, what do you do?
I bought a full screen DVD of Spice World a few months ago. Why? Because it's terrible and I want it.
yes, absolutely.
It is never going to get the upgrade, but at least I have it.
Listen, if there is any movie worthy of the Criterion Collection treatment, it is Spice World.
yes it is. Put that on the record.
right Well, you know, it's funny because it's like you talked about Wizard of Oz. So having Wizard of Oz and having this copy of Wizard of Oz, whether it was a, you know, recorded off of television or the actual version of this movie, and then that breaking and going this long period of time without it. And it's like, you know, then you have to rent it or, you know, rent it online and watch it. But it's like when you finally have it in your hands, you're free to watch this movie anytime you want to. And there's just such a, like a, not a feeling of power, but like a feeling of personal satisfaction, like completion. I don't know. Yeah. It's just, there's something better about having the movie like in your hands and knowing that you can watch it anytime you want to, especially movies that you love.
When we moved into this house, we lived in a house before this one that was built in like 1890 and it had lots of problems. But let me tell you, the internet never went out. We moved into this new house, the internet and the power go out all the time. And it's a much newer house. And if the internet's out, it's like, well, you can't stream. There's no internet. That's how you get the stream.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are we going to do? Talk to each other like some kind of animals?
Right.
So, yeah. I've got this massive wall of physical media that we can turn to and enjoy. And we've done that a few times in the last couple of years because it's like, well, power's going to be out for about 4 hours or internet's out.
I always like hearing a good coupling story. And I think kind of talking, like hearing about the differences and similarities between you and Trent, I'm interested to hear, like, so how did you two meet? How did this whole relationship come to be? I always like hearing those stories.
We met, as one does in this modern age, through the mm-hmm. internet.
Of course.
We specifically met through Match.com.
Sure.
So we were kind of right on that cusp where the dating apps like were coming into style, but they hadn't hit yet. So yeah. We were a little early for that. So we actually did a service like that. And
yeah.
It was weird when we got to know each other. We matched up and we were texting and messaging and, you know, have a phone call. And the first time we talked on the phone, it was like 2 hours. We had like a 2 hour, like barely a pause conversation. And we just mm-hmm. kind of clicked. But as we got to know each other, we figured out all of these places where we could have met and never did. He worked with somebody for years who I rode the bus with. Like, I've known her my entire childhood. I've known her longer than he's known her. And we went to the same student matinee that had like 50 people in it and when we were in high school. Like, it was almost empty. But he was there and I was there. We were both just all these places. We lived a mile apart, but it took the internet to bring us together.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of instantaneous and we were sort of inseparable and disgusting ever since.
Isn't that nice though? Like, it's funny because my girlfriend and I talk about this from time to time that there was a small part of my life after I graduated high school and started college at USD where I lived in Omaha with my sister. And when I lived in Omaha with my sister, she lived in Omaha. My girlfriend lived in Omaha. Mm-hmm. And it was like, there is such a chance that our paths could have crossed,
right.
But they never did. And, you know, then like, let's see. So that would have been like 10 years later or even longer than that, then our paths finally crossed, but it was when we were here in Sioux Falls. And it's like, you know, what would have happened if we did meet sooner? Would we have liked each other who we were at that time in our life?
And that's the other conversation that we always have is we were different people. If we had met in high school, neither of us had really accepted our own strangeness and burst out of our shell and got okay with just being who we are. And the person I mentioned who I rode the bus with, it was her and a couple of other coworkers where they were all just like, we like you and we're going to make you our friend with him, and just made him come out of his shell.
Yeah.
Like, they forced it out of him because they're those kinds of people with no filter. And they're just like, nope, this is happening.
You have to have those people. Like, having those people in your life makes things like uncomfortable, but also like necessary. It kind of hits the fast forward button when you know you might be stuck on pause.
I thank them for it because I probably wouldn't have met the same guy if they hadn't done that.
Right. Yeah. It's just such an interesting thought when people are like just missing each other at one part in their life where it's like they're both in the same spot, but they never connect. And then years later, perfect. It was just the way to be sappy about it. It was just the way it was meant to be.
Oh yeah. And if you start thinking like how many things had to line up in your life to put you where you were, when you were, and you just keep going backwards, it's insane.
Right.
Like if I hadn't done this and I hadn't worked there and I hadn't met that person.
And those opportunities may never have been in alignment, and it's just a crazy turn of events. I love those stories. I love those stories so much. I always love hearing those stories. I want to talk. We'll talk about our featured movie of the week here in just a second, but I do want to talk a little bit more about theater because you are pretty heavily involved in the Good Night Theater Collective, right?
Yes. So I am a collective member and I do primarily the cabarets. I'm always open to doing the shows. I haven't done a full musical yet, but I try to help out where I can. So like I was painting floors yesterday.
Yeah.
I was doing set work or I've worked the front of house, things like that. And of course I used to work at the Washington Pavilion. So I was involved in the ticketing side, just the opposite. I didn't work directly for Goodnight, but I worked with them. Sure. So still kind of heavily involved. But yeah, I do primarily the cabarets, and it's just a lot of singing and dancing and pushing me farther than I think I am capable. And yeah. I just have to trust the process and trust the people, because it's like, damn it, they were right. by the time it clicks and you feel good about yourself, yeah. It's just like, yeah, I just have to trust these people and this process and know it's all going to be okay.
Yeah. How long have you been involved with Goodnight now? It's been, because Goodnight's been around.
Yeah, my first show was January of 2019. So okay. Right around this time, 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I imagine, like, you know, being involved with something for such a nice span of time, like, there are a lot of people that kind of come in and out, and you forge these really great friendships with all these people mm-hmm. who you work with. So when you do a show, my guess is that's kind of like the way in is getting cast in their kind of the large auditions, right? It's the big audition process where they kind of see a big group of people at once, and then they kind of cast things from there. And then after that point of like getting cast in the show, that's when it's like, well, if you'd like to still stay involved, is that kind of how you get into like the set design aspect, kind of anything behind the scenes? Does that come after?
Yeah. They just kind of put out the open call and say, hey, we need people for this. We need people for that. And I don't always have, like, it doesn't always line up to do it. So like last weekend, I know they were painting and I got a message, hey, we need an extra set of hands. I was like, well, I'm babysitting my nieces. I could bring them. They'd be very cute, but not helpful. Because they're like 4 and almost 6. So they would not have contributed the way you want. but you know, like yesterday, I was like, well, it's football season and Trent's going to be doing that all day. It's the playoffs. I got a window here.
Yeah.
I don't need to be here for 8 hours of football. So yeah, I'm going to do something more productive.
Right. And it gives him that window to just be like football, football, football. And then you can be like, okay, I'm going to go do my thing for a little bit.
But yeah, a lot of it is just, you know, they put out the call and whoever's available can jump on in.
Good. What are some of your favorite things that you've done with Goodnight? Because I know you've done bunch of the cabarets. Like, were there particular shows that still stand out in your memory, or even just like some of the songs that you've done that have really been like, you know, getting to tackle this song was just an incredible thing.
Okay, so you, I know Jess Johansson, and yes. I are the two front runners for the most cabarets, and this season I finally caught up with her. So we are tied right now, but she's doing one soon and she's gonna pass me, but then I do another one and I'm gonna tie her again. So it's this sort of feud, but not really, because we love each other. But I've been trying to get caught up, and she gives me crap about, oh well, if I did 3 in a year, it's like I can't help myself. So it's just, you know, that's fun, just having that like faux competition and the friendships. And one of the shows that she and I did together, we've done 3 now, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
Sure.
But we did an iconic cabaret, which was June of 2021. It was the first post-pandemic show with an audience. So it was like the first one back. It was 5 people in the cabaret, which up to that point, we'd only ever had 4. We had a live band. The set list was insane. And we just, all of us needed that show so badly.
Yeah.
And you don't know how much you need it until you're in it and it's over. Mm-hmm. And yeah, 2021, we've all kind of been on autopilot for a year at that point with COVID. And then we got in there and it was a killer set list, but it was also like a very difficult next level choreography. And we were all frustrated and tired and, you know, out of sorts because we had done this in a while, but we all came together and pulled it off. And we all still have lunch together sometimes because it was such a bonding thing. So that show, you know, when people ask me, like, what are some of your favorites? That one really stands out to me. But they've all had something like where I've got to meet a new person, or there's this long running inside joke or, hey, remember when that choreography was really hard and we all just nailed it? Or like last fall, I like to remind Simon, hey, remember when you tried to kill me on stage? He elbowed me in the face, like accidentally. He's all limbs. He came too close. He swung his arm and somebody told me they could hear my teeth click. And it's the song, it's theater, it's live. You got to just keep going.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just the stuff like that, that I've really enjoyed taking away and just getting to work with people. I have kind of like the list, the checklist of who haven't I worked with? Who haven't I worked with? Who haven't I worked with? I need to keep crossing people down.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm getting there. There's only a handful of people that I have not done a show with. So it's just like, your time will come.
You've got your checklist. You can see the check marks and where the empty boxes still are. And it's like, it's getting to be that time.
Right. And just bottom line, they're so talented. There's so much talent in that group. It makes me sick. and I just sit there and go, damn it. And all of this.
Yeah. It's like, you kind of sit like half in admiration and half in kind of like, I'm here too. Like I get to be here too. And it's like, but I think it's always just an incredible experience to kind of get to see these people firsthand with how massively talented they are. And I think, you know, doing theater in Sioux Falls, just in general, like it's incredible the artists that we have in this town. You know, I had the opportunity a couple, so like 5 years ago now to direct Heather's the Musical, at the Sioux Falls Community Theater before it was the Premier Playhouse. And like, just the amount of talent that we had to work with, it was just, overwhelming. And it's so great to see, performers like step out and just do their thing. And it's, you know, to see them continue that, it's like, oh, thank God you're still doing stuff, because you are so good. So good.
Don't ever go on a hiatus. I need this.
Yeah. Just keep having a great time. Like, keep doing what you do. You're wonderful. Well, I think I want to ask about that, because you talked about the pandemic and coming back from the pandemic and getting back up on stage. Like, you know, of course, the pandemic's not over, but, you know, the first time you get back on stage after everything kind of stops, except for the shows from home. What was it like to do that, to do the shows from home, to like record these songs and these sketches, like while kind of confined in your own space?
Yeah, we did a few kind of remote things, and then we also did some shows that were recorded for streaming, and we had like 20 people or something in the audience. So there was sort of two phases of it. And I think, again, we were all just so happy to do anything. It's like, what do you need? What do you need? Anything you need, sign me up. I'm here. Let's do it. And yeah, it's just like, here's a song that already existed. Learn it, record it. Here's a song that's brand new. And it was a little more like, production involved, because it's like, first you have to learn the song, then you had to record the song, no video, so just the audio, best audio you could come up with. And of course, everybody has different variations, like recording into a phone, recording into a microphone, just their laptop. So everybody's sort of working with what they have, and then editing that together, and then, you know, lip singing to video. And like I told you before we started, my husband goes into production mode when I say I need help with that. He wants the lighting to be right, he wants the sound to be right. And so he has this lamp where it's just kind of one of those LED lamps that changes like from colors to low light to really bright light, and he's like turning it and bouncing the light and making sure I'm well lit. And when they put the piece together for one of them, the girls who were in the video with me were like, how did you get your video so good? We're coming to your house next time. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's what happens when your husband's a nerd. He insisted on it being good, and so it looked good. He recorded it in like the high definition like camera. So I can say a lot of it was, him because all I had to do was stand there and like awkwardly dance. They're like, get some B-roll. And so it's like me just dancing alone for 4 minutes. And then they didn't even use that much. Oh, it's like, Luke, I hope you enjoyed 4 minutes of me dancing.
Glad you got that footage.
Yeah, but you know, some of that stuff was just, it was so fun to just have a project and something to look forward to. And then when we started doing the pre-recorded kind of small audience, that was a little bit different because it was still a full cabaret. So you're doing the rehearsal and you're spaced out and you're wearing masks. And then we have to do choreo. And, you know, the people who came were very enthusiastic, but unlike most of the cabarets, which are two nights, this was one and done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was good, but different. Because you had you had all the theater people in the audience. You had the most enthusiastic audience.
Yeah.
They were so hungry for it. But like, I had to wait until, you know, later that I could actually watch it. I never get to watch my cabarets. So I don't know how I actually sounded. And, you know, being a true theater person, I just nitpick and go, oh, there, I made a mistake. There, I made a mistake. I didn't sound so good there. The night we did it twice for the very first one that we recorded. And the night they recorded, I screwed up my lyrics and I knew I screwed up my lyrics, but what do? You keep going. And of course, that's the one that's committed to film.
No.
It's like, oh, come on. And I told somebody after the show and they're like, I literally didn't notice. I was like, that's because I committed to my failure.
That's right. That's right. Yep. As long as you stay in that moment and stay focused, even if you screw up completely, as long as
just
you
just go, make it up.
Yep. Oh gosh. Yeah. Just so many frightening tales of like either like going off on a line or, you know, singing the second verse before the first verse. It's just like, oh no.
The live theater's always perfect. There's no mistakes. Yeah, everyone is always flawless.
Never a problem. Never a problem. Yeah. I thought it was so cool that Goodnight was still able to do things during that, because I think that not only for the performers, but I think for the audiences, like it was just so nice to still have something, because we were all going crazy. Like, it was just a stir crazy, and not being able to go do things that you would normally do. And you kind of like take all of these enjoyable things for granted. And then like to kind of have the arts come back, it was like, oh, okay, I didn't even realize that my cup was empty, because now it's being refilled. So yeah, kudos to Goodnight for doing, you know, whatever they could during the pandemic to everybody who did.
Yeah. I know like the Premier Playhouse, they had kind of spaced out audiences, and they took a lot of cares to have people masked on stage, and they recorded some of those shows. And yeah, people got really creative.
Yeah, yeah.
On how can we keep this going?
right. And I think that's just a testament to, you know, how creative, even outside of the actual art form, creative people can be to try and find ways to keep going.
Well, and it was also just nice because I could get my friends from college who live all over the country, I could be like, hey, go buy a ticket and you could actually see me perform, which you've never done because you don't live here. And so some of them were like in Boston and they had like a little watching party on their end. They would be texting me like, I'm watching it.
Gosh,
and now people this day, people still ask me like, are they going to record that? Are they going to stream that? I was like, that was kind of a once in a lifetime thing. I wish, but it's a lot of logistics and a lot of work to get those out.
It does take a lot of work. It was really great because I know I think it might have even been the first Christmas one during the pandemic. I was like, I need something. I need something. And I was like, okay, good. Goodnight's doing one where I can just sit at home and watch this. And I did. And I was like, oh, thank you. thank you. Good times. I want to talk really quickly about your podcast, because I know that we'll save a lot of that discussion for when Trent is on the show as well.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk. So what was the foundation of this? Where did the idea come about? And, you know, how has everything been going for you guys doing the show?
Yeah, so we kind of had this running joke because we were doing this without doing this. Every time we would go to a movie or we'd watch a movie at home, the first thing we would do is turn to each other and be like, what did you think? I didn't like this. I liked this. And we'd have just this conversation of varying degrees of what we, you know, just watched. And we started, I started going to all of the Best Picture movies probably the year before I think it was about a year before we started dating.
Okay.
And then after a couple of years, I was like, hey, this is a list of movies that I actually think you would like. And then it turned into, we did that together. And so people would, we'd say, oh yeah, we've seen all the Best Picture nominees. And they'd say, well, what did you think? And we would just start kind of bickering as a couple times about, I liked this one. No, you didn't. And here's why. And my brother was visiting once and he literally said, do you guys have a podcast? And we just kind of looked at each other because we had already sort of talked about doing it at that point.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is too funny that you say that because, and then, you know, the pandemic happened and all of a sudden your activities and your routine and everything was very different. And he actually bought the microphone for my birthday that year in 2020. Yeah. And my birthday was in April. So this was like early days.
Sure. Yeah.
and then we still sat on it for almost another year, but we continued to just kind of stew about it and think about it. And it just boils down to, I am a movie buff and he is not.
Yeah.
And it's always fascinating to me to find one that he has seen and I haven't.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of the root of, we were doing it already. Let's just try it. Let's just see what happens. And we're having a lot of fun with it. I don't know how many people listen to it. I've got some diehards. I know out there. But like most podcasts, I think if you look at your stats, it's fascinating to see all the people. Like there's a guy in Amsterdam who listens to us.
That's awesome. That's
he follows so us cool. on Twitter. He reaches out to us. I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
And a man in Amsterdam. Yeah, there's people in Australia and in Asia and different parts of Europe and South America. It's like, cool. I love this. And the way we are doing it, we're trying to have a diverse lineup of movies.
Yeah.
So it's not just all one kind of thing. It's like, what do you like? Do you like a movie about cars? We did all the Fast and Furious movies. Do you like a modern noir? We did The Batman. Do you like 80s stuff? We've got some Stallone movies. And that's just, again, us figuring out more stuff we didn't know we liked. I am finding out I'm sort of obsessed with cheesy 80s and 90s action movies. And I had no idea. This is an itch I didn't know needed to be scratched. And like we watched RoboCop. And I was like, this movie is incredible. It's awful. I love it.
I love RoboCop. It's so silly, but it's so silly. Wonderful.
And it's just sort of been that. And, you know, we still kind of started with the foundation of we'll do the Best Picture nominees. So we get a little highbrow from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, hard left. Let's watch Showgirls.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's kind of where it came from and what we're trying to get out of it. And, you know, Trent listens to a lot of podcasts. And before we started, he said, okay, if we're going to do this, we have to commit because the secret to success is consistency. You have to put it out on the days that you say you're going to do it and you can't stop because if you stop, you'll never go back.
Yeah.
So it's kind of our new hobby. We had some other hobbies that sort of, like I said, got put on hold with the pandemic and this replaced it now. So this is our fun time.
It's just awesome. I haven't listened to the awards episode yet. I have that queued up to listen to because I want to kind of run through find out what your awards are first off, like what your categories are. But have there been any movies that like either you or Trent were super, other than RoboCop, of course, but super surprised that you loved, or maybe if there were some the other way, like super surprised that you didn't like?
Oh man, you know, We've done almost 200 movies now. They all start to blend together after a while. So off the top of my head, I'm having trouble thinking of a specific one. I mean, when we get to some of the Oscar ones, those are always interesting. Like, these are the movies that are nominated for Best Picture, like what they have defined as these are the best pictures of the year. And let's be honest, if you've seen a lot of movies, they're often not always the accurate ones, but here we are. And so it's always interesting to me, the ones where somebody will be like, oh my God, this movie's amazing. I love this movie. This is the best movie that's ever been made. And I watch it, and I'm like, like, it's good.
It was fine.
Those are the ones that are honestly the hardest to talk about, because you kind of just go, like, what else do you want me to say? Now we have to fill 40 minutes.
Or like the movies where, you know, everybody loves them. Everybody just loves this movie. And you watch it and you just don't click with it. And you feel like by saying that, you're like committing some kind of crime. Like, you know, that movie was fine, I guess. And then, people rain down anger. Why did you like that?
I always say, guys, this is the thing about movies. They are subjective.
Absolutely.
Like, you are allowed to like what you like. I don't have to get on board with you. You don't have to get on board with me. You might have valid points. And sometimes I will even agree with your valid points. And I don't care. This movie is good to me. Like, a few years ago, when we did, it was pre-podcast. Like, that's the thing that's the worst about starting a podcast is all the stuff you could have done.
Yeah.
Like, we did all the Harry Potter movies because he had never seen a Harry Potter movie. Oh. And I would get his commentary after every single one. And it's like, dang it, we should have saved that content. But like, when we did the year that La La Land came out, on paper, that movie is for me. Like, that is a musical. It is a love letter to the old musicals that I grew up watching. I didn't like it that much. Like, it's not bad. It's really not. Yeah. I haven't watched it since. Came out six years ago. I'm like,
Sure. Yeah.
I just, I didn't get the hype the way that everybody was hyping it up. And maybe that's my own fault for like hyping it up myself, but I left the theater going, it's fine.
it's so funny that I feel like that is a movie where there's such a split on it, because it's like people are either, God, I loved La La Land, so good. Or it's just like, I don't see what the big idea is. For me, like, I like it. I do. But I'm so glad Moonlight won that year, because I love Moonlight. And, you know, not everybody loves Moonlight either. But that's okay.
Right. And I'm the top two movies that year. Moonlight also didn't quite click with me. But everything that year was pretty good. Like, there were things I liked. I don't even remember what year that was, the thing that I liked best, but it was like the fourth or fifth, like, down for everybody else. I was like, nope, that one's my favorite.
Yeah. And some years are like that. Some years where it's like the output is so overall so good, but like the one that you click with is just kind of the one that's a slight outlier, and it's still, for some reason, there's something that draws you to it, even if everybody else is like, no, I'm going to go this way. No, my movie is this one. This is my dog in this race, and I'm okay with it.
Oh, yeah. Last year, Trent and I were both obsessed with Nightmare Alley and didn't know we would be obsessed with it, because that was the one we were like, what is this? I've barely heard of it. It just kind of came and went a couple of months ago, and now it's up. It's like, okay, Guillermo del Toro, apparently it's a remake. And we watched it and we're like, this is the greatest thing we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I have a friend who hates it. She hated Nightmare Alley, but she said she listened to our podcast and was like, okay, I appreciated your perspective, and you made me appreciate it more.
Right?
It's still not for me.
Yeah. But still, there's that little victory where it's like, okay, I understand what you're saying, but I'm still not completely down with it.
Yep. I respectfully decline to continue this conversation.
Right. Movie podcasts are the best. just the best.
It's almost like there's an endless font of content. There's just so many. Right? There's so many. And that's why we picked what we did, because there's always something we haven't watched.
Yeah.
It just, they keep making movies forever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to your next, like the next discovery that you guys make where you're like, oh, this movie is awesome. Like, I'm just looking forward to that, where you're standing 100%, both of you completely behind a movie. Cause that'll be a fun episode to listen, or a movie that you both just hate. Like that's, you know, I hate to be that guy. Cause I don't like the end of the year list where people are like, these are the worst 10 movies of the year. I don't like that because there's a lot of hard work involved with making a movie. But when there's something that you see and you're just like, I don't get it. It's fun to hear people like, try and like dance around that they dislike a movie, but still just they can't resist saying that I just didn't like this movie. So,
well, and that's how we did our end of year thing. It kind of happened by accident, but we do individual choice. It's his picks and my picks, because number one, a movie might be new to you that isn't new to me, and vice versa. Right. And number two, we are two people with two opinions, and you can like something that I don't like, and vice versa.
Yeah. 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 And it's great. It's great to hear. It's great to hear the conversation that comes out of, different opinions. I just think that's a lot of fun. So, speaking of movie podcasts, Betsy, should we talk about a movie?
Oh, maybe eventually we should get to that.
I'm just staying true to the formula. That's all. Well, now that it's been an hour, let's talk about our featured movie of the week. This week's movie is 1994's Luc Besson film, The Professional.
Let's talk business. This guy comes to town every Tuesday. Are you free Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm free Tuesday.
You can't stop what you can't see.
This guy came from the outside. He was a pro. He was fast.
In the art of the kill, Leon was the master.
Somebody's coming up. Somebody's serious.
He never missed a hit. He never got caught.
You're indestructible. Bullets slide off you. You play with them.
And above all else, he never had a reason to care. Until now.
I like these calm little moments before the storm.
My family was shot down by DEA officers.
Three kids here. One of them is missing. Find her.
Please open the door. Please.
Okay, so this is a part of my Movies You Should See series that is at the State Theater. This will have played by the time this episode comes out. It will have played last night, and then we'll be playing again on Sunday. I love this movie very, very deeply, and after rewatching it again for this podcast, I love it even more. Betsy, I'm interested to hear your experiences with this movie. Like, when was the first time that you watched it, and how do you feel about The Professional?
So I actually have a very crystal clear memory of the first time I watched this because I wasn't planning on seeing this movie.
Okay.
I had, again, when talking about finding those people who have movies, when I got to college, again, it's now a whole new ballgame. And there was a guy in my dorm who, it was between me and him, we had like 600 movies.
Yeah.
So people would, like, I would go to him, he'd go to me, we'd send people to each other, like, go talk to that guy if you want a movie. And every once in a while, he would like do a little viewing party, and he would book one of the like rec rooms, and he'd say, okay, on this day at this time, we're going to show this movie. And so that was actually a way I got to watch a lot of things I probably never would have seen. Like, he showed Death to Smoochie, which I think I'd barely ever heard of at that point.
Yeah.
And he said, we're going to watch American History X. I by all accounts, was under the impression this is an amazing movie that I should go see. So I was like, cool, I'm going to go over and I'm going to watch American History X. He starts the movie and it's The Professional. Oh. I to this day don't know why the switch, what happened, but it was the director's cut. So it was Leon, The Professional.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so I'm like, first confused because it wasn't what I saw. And I see the title card and I'm like, oh, okay. This movie I've literally never heard of. Yeah. But I see that it's Luc Besson, who I had already seen The Fifth Element at that point many, many times. Talk about a movie we picked up and rented a lot.
Yeah.
So I knew him. I knew Gary Oldman. I knew Jean Reno because he had been in like Mission Impossible and a couple other movies that I had seen at this point growing up. I had no idea, I think, who Natalie Portman is, or I barely did because I think Star Wars, you know, that is probably my context for her.
Right, right.
And I watched this movie. I was like, this movie is incredible. And I'm obsessed with this. Like that was kind of one of those movies early on as I'm forming, like learning how to watch movies and appreciate movies and notice things about movies. This is one of those early ones because I watched it with somebody who already kind of knew. And so he could kind of say, oh, this is cool because, and look at this thing. And I went home and this was one of those movies over summer break where I was like, brothers, gather around. I need you to see this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I hit the table. And the version I got was The Professional. And that was the moment I realized there's two cuts of this.
Right.
And this time when I rewatched it, I actually watched The Professional. So the American version. And then I went back and watched those cut scenes just to kind of remind myself, okay, what was it? Because at first I was adamant, like, this isn't the same movie. I was so confused.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I had seen the extended cut and then there was stuff missing. And watching it now, I'm like, okay, so can I live without all of it? Sure. But there's like a few moments that I really feel when they're included, there's stuff later that just has more impact because of it.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those movies that at first I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. And then as I've watched it more, I'm like, it's also just good and interesting and unique. Like there's so much to unpack here with like the way it's acted, the way it's written, the music, the tension. Mm-hmm. You don't usually get a movie about a hitman that makes you cry.
Right. Right.
And so it's just one of those where I'm so glad you picked this one. Like when you say things you need to see, you probably need to see this because it's an example of a movie that can be really cool, but also just really good.
Yeah. It floors me. Like, because all of my memories of this movie before the rewatch were like, oh, this is just one of the coolest. Like, this is one of my favorite action movies because it's smart. Like, it's got a good script. There's good performances. And then, like, some of the action scenes are just awesome. Like, that going into it, that's what I had in mind. And, like, I just feel like I need to have an action movie on there that's not Die Hard, not
RoboCop.
RoboCop. Yeah. Not Speed, you know, Point Break. Like, the ones that I always kind of go to. But I need one of my favorite action movies, and this is one of them. And watching it again, the story is so rich and engrossing, and like you care about the characters in a way in this movie that I don't necessarily know that you do in other action movies.
Yeah. They're real people with real problems.
Yeah. Like I love John McClane. Like, don't get me wrong. Like when John McClane is stuck in the building in Die Hard, I care about his well-being, but I also know that he's gonna make it out okay. Like, he's the name above the title. Like, Bruce Willis is a big deal. And even at the time, even though he wasn't when the movie was made, he still just emits this charisma where it's like, oh yeah, there's no way that this guy isn't getting out of this situation with the professional though. Oh, go ahead.
That's how they made those movies back then, was he's the hero, he makes it to the end of the movie, the hero wins.
And like, you know, he is not Arnold, he is not Sylvester Stallone, but he is not like for comparison's sake, he's not Keanu Reeves either. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they're just, he's built a particular way, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna see this guy, this body type, defeat these villains, and then you know, everything's going to end up okay. In The Professional, like, you've got Jean Reno, who, first off, like, French actor, just a very, like, kind of distinct looking guy. You know, very, his body type is very different from an Arnold or Sylvester Stallone.
He's not an action hero.
right. He is the calculating assassin. And you have to, you're expected to cheer for this person whose job is killing other people for money. And it's like, it's this hard ask, but yet the way the movie unfolds and you find his heart as he is finding his heart. Mm-hmm. And it just, you go on this journey where it's like, as you said, I would never expect an action movie like this, a movie about a hitman, to make me cry. But every time I get so choked up as it nears its conclusion. Like, yeah. I feel like I unintentionally with this series have picked like three movies that make me cry. Like with the first two, that was the goal. But with this one, when I watched it again, I was like, oh, I've just picked tearjerkers. Like that's all I go for. But yeah,
that's amazing. Like it's on the surface, it's an action movie. Mm-hmm. But that's not what it is. by the time you get to the end of it, you are so invested in both of these characters, mm-hmm. and you want the good guy to win and the bad guy to lose. And you kind of get it, but you also feel all the feelings. on the way.
Oh yeah. So let's kind of we'll break this movie down just a little bit. Like I always have a hard time kind of like analyzing the movie away a normal movie podcast would analyze it because I'm always interested more in like emotional connection to it. But at the same time, like there are things about this movie that it's always fun to talk about. And I think the first thing here about this movie that stands out so much are the characters. Like they have the three very, very fleshed out, very distinct characters that you are invested in. Two of them, of course, as the heroes, the ones that you care about, you want good things to happen to. But I can't think of a villain like Gary Oldman Stansfield. Maybe, I mean, going back to Die Hard, which I hate that is the reference. That's the crown jewel of action movies for me. But Alan Rickman in Die Hard is just awesome. but Gary Oldman is pretty dang incredible as Stansfield here. What about these characters, all of them, kind of stand out to you? Which one do you find yourself most like interested in their journey? I'm sure probably Leon, but like what characters, like what about the characters kind of stand out for you?
Well, like the movie just starts with the kind of a bang where you're introduced to Leon in such an interesting way where you don't see him and he's just this invisible menace. And then when he appears, it's out of a shadow. It's like one of the most memorable introductions I think I've ever seen in a movie where this knife comes out of nowhere and then his face. Mm. And that's just such a cool thing. And you expect it to be one way. And then he's just this kind of quiet, lonely dude buying milk, barely saying two words to this girl who lives in his building. And he is very hesitant to get involved when things are going badly right next door to him. He doesn't want to get involved. And yet it's just like you said, the discovery that he makes as he makes that choice to literally open his life up, open the door to Natalie Portman. And then just the journey they take together where he is very childlike and she's a child who acts like an adult.
Yeah.
And the two of them together just sort of balance each other out and they bring each other, you know, in his case, he grows up and in her case, she regains her childhood in a way. Yeah. And it's just this beautiful unfolding and it's funny and weird. the shenanigans they get up to together. And you believe like when she says, I want to be a cleaner and you're going to teach me, and he won't do it, but he finally agrees. that there's moments in this movie you believe that he is gonna let her kill people. Yeah, right. Like I'm fully aware that she is pointing a gun at somebody, and I'm like, what kind of a movie is this? And then there's so much humor because it's a paint gun.
Yeah.
So he's like not that crazy a person, and right. He's like very strict with her and like, no, you do it this way. And it's just funny. It's yeah. So the two of them together, and I've kind of gone on a tangent. I'm saying,
but
just the two of them together is really, really interesting. And of course, you've got Natalie Portman, who this is her first movie. Are you kidding me?
Right out of the gates. Just awesome.
And she just comes in and she's acting twice her age. And she is funny and dark and crying, and you just want to like hold her, but you also want to slap her sometimes. Right.
Oh yeah.
Cause she's just this like messed up kid who's never had a father figure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and her actual father's terrible, and her mother is terrible, and her sister is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I want to just call attention to something really quickly. This was watching it this time was the first time that I noticed that her mom is Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I mean, she's definitely made up like her, but I didn't know if it was the same person.
I was just like, oh, and my girlfriend pointed it out, and I was just like, oh yeah. Just like a complete no sell on my part of her noticing that before I did. But yeah, I was just, my mind was just like, wow, I had no idea. I've loved this movie for that long. And yeah, just completely different character from Audrey. So
even though it's kind of the exact same costume, but she's doing a very different voice, you can miss it easily. But yeah, you got those two. And then of course, the introduction for Gary Oldman, I think it's just amazing how you can be scared of the back of someone's head.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, name me another movie where you just see this dude in a tan suit vibing, and they're like, you don't want me to go talk to this guy. And when he turns around, he's like sniffing and getting really intimate and touching, and it is terrifying.
Yeah.
He is scarier smelling this guy and like kissing you on the cheek and holding you than the dude with the knife.
Yep. Yeah. Of all of his henchmen don't bother me. It's him.
No, his henchmen are morons.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But yeah, this was kind of the first movie that I had seen Gary Oldman in, I think, beyond The Fifth Element. So at this point, I had only seen him in this really over the top space comedy.
Yeah.
And he's great in that, but this is so different.
Yeah.
And I was like genuinely a little bit afraid of Gary Oldman after this movie.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Right. I think this is the movie where, like, I had seen him in stuff before. Like, I had seen JFK. I had seen Bram Stoker's Dracula, Fifth Element. Mm-hmm. Like, I had seen those movies. I don't know. Maybe I don't know if I saw The Fifth Element before I saw this. I may have seen this first. But I know at least I had seen those other two before this one. And I'd already known who he was and was like, oh, I like him. But watching him here, this was where I fell in love with him as an actor, you know, terrified by him, but
you just
fell
go,
in love with
wow.
him. As, yeah. Because it's like the whole gesture of him getting into character on screen, where he puts the pill in his mouth and cracks the pill open and rolls his neck back. It's just like, it's such a simple gesture, but it is terrifying.
It's very visceral because there's a lot of noises and he's like kind of convulsing and when, and then he just lets out a sigh and then wreaks havoc. Mm-hmm. It's such a turn. And like the first time they go into, well, I guess not the first time, but when they come back at noon the second day and he's just like conducting an invisible orchestra while going on a killing spree.
Right.
And then he is shot and he's more upset that his suit got ruined.
I know.
He's not worried about the fact that he's bleeding. He is concerned that his suit has a tear.
Man, what a character. And I think it's really cool too, because it's like, he is, you said it beautifully, like he's very visceral. He's, all of these noises are coming off him. He is such a noisy character. Yes. And then Leon is quiet, like restrained, like, and they're like, you know, as a hitman, that's kind of what his job is. He has to be unnoticed and get these things mm-hmm. done and not get caught. And of course, Gary Oldman's a cop who can just get in and out of these situations and find ways around, you know, being held responsible for bad things. And it's just like, there's such a dynamic going on there between those two characters. And I love the fact that they don't meet until the end.
No, he never sees him. They never see each other.
Yeah. And they're both these two driving forces, like completely opposed the whole time. And then it's not until the very end that they see each other. And that scene is so brief, but so, so memorable. And the waterworks have already started by that point, but you know, they continue there. I should probably say now that we're into the conversation, about 15 minutes, spoiler alert for the professional, which if you're listening to this podcast,
what
probably
are you
know,
doing?
Yeah. Most of these movies, you know, that they get spoiled. So, but yeah, that conclusion, to, you know, to kind of jump through the movie is just incredible. Like, it is such a hero's way to go out. And such like, you know, you're watching it and you feel so sad that Leon has been defeated. But at the same
the way they film it too, like, it's like he's almost out and he can mm-hmm. see the sunshine and it's from his perspective. And then there's just a flash of light. There's not even necessarily a sound. It's just a light. Oh yeah. And it just, it devastates you because you think they're going to be live happily ever after. Mm-hmm. He's going to make it through. And that's not what happens.
No.
But the bad guy also doesn't win.
Yeah. And then when he hands him the ring from the grenade, it is just like, you see Gary Oldman's character register, like the whole thing
in real time.
Yeah, it's like, what is this? What are you handing me? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that is the one thing when I went back and watched the extra stuff from the director's cut that I really wish had made the final cut. And I get why they didn't, because it's a whole training sequence where Leon is taking her out on his jobs. He's taking her to hits and training her. And he just at one point says, have you ever seen the ring trick? And he throws a grenade and he shows her the ring. So the first time I saw this being the extended cut, it's a callback and it has a lot more weight to it because you know what he's handing him when he opens his hand. It's like, oh, it's like the thing from earlier in the movie. And then when it wasn't in there, when I showed my brothers, I was very upset because that was like the little moment that I just thought was a nice touch. Yeah. And so for it to not be there, it's like, okay, it works, but you, the audience, know exactly what is being handed to him before he opens his hand.
Yeah.
And then it's just this great moment before a massive explosion.
So when I went back and rewatched it, I just watched the US theatrical release and I should have watched the extended version, but that gives me an excuse now to watch it three times like this year.
Three, four, five. Yeah. Who cares?
I can watch this one like every day. What? There's no problem with that at all. It's so good. Like it's just so good.
I love that you gave me a reason to revisit this. This is one of those where for a long time I would watch it a lot. Like after I discovered it in college, I would watch it a lot. I went out and bought it and I had it again, back to the physical media, and I'd put it on. And then, you know, after a while you start adding other things to your collection.
Right.
And I hadn't watched this one in a while. I had shown Trent because he hadn't seen it when we started dating.
Yeah.
And I hadn't watched it probably since then. And it just still every time has that impact where it's so beautifully acted and mm-hmm. it's chaos and noise, but it's also quiet and lovely. Yeah. And you want to hug and rescue mm-hmm. Natalie Portman, but you also want to make her stop being such a grown up and just enjoy your childhood.
Yeah. You're a kid. Be a kid.
And you're hoping that this movie ends with the two of them riding off into the sunset, mm-hmm. having got their vengeance. And that's not how it goes. She just kind of goes off and, you know, lives her life with all of these lessons that she has learned. And we don't know what happens to her.
Right.
But they had this time together and there's the metaphorical like plant taking root. The literal plant.
A little on the nose, but I'll overlook it.
I'll forgive it.
I'll let that pass.
That's how you write movies though. You have to have a metaphor in there somewhere.
Exactly. I want to talk because the way that this movie is paced is so interesting to me because it's almost like, it's like bookends. The movie starts mm-hmm. with a really great action sequence and ends with a really great action sequence. And of course, there are moments peppered in throughout of different action scenes, but the standouts are the introduction to Leon and then the climax at the end. Mm-hmm. But that whole middle section is just like story. I love having a movie that is so action-packed, that prioritizes story, character development, relationships, things like that. Like, does this is a stupid question, I'm sorry, but I was just trying to think of a way to phrase it as a question. And it's like, does the story of this movie stand out to you as something special? See, it was a terrible question.
No, absolutely. No, I get what you're trying to say though. But this movie would not be special if you didn't have everything else sandwiched in between. Because you're right, it's a big action sequence, and then it gets very calm and very quiet. And there's like a couple of scenes where like Leon goes off to do a job and comes back bleeding. We don't know what happened.
Yeah,
like, we don't see that mission. And he comes back and they just kind of go about their day and like bandage him up and drink some milk. And that's the end of that. Yeah. And there's none of that in between. And there's a couple of sequences where he's training her that are very tense, where, mm-hmm. like I said, you think that he's actually going to allow this child to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And then you find out, oh no, he's just, it's a training tool. It's a training mm-hmm. exercise. And then at the end, it just goes to 11. And you get that great iconic scene with Gary Oldman screaming everyone. If there's one thing people know from this movie and they don't know it's from this movie, it's Gary Oldman in a tan suit screaming as loud as he can, everyone. And apparently he told the sound guy he was going to do that. And he's like, take off your headphones because this is about to happen. He at least had the dignity to give him a heads up.
It's such a great moment too.
And then when they say everyone and he's exiting and the stairwell is spiraling and it's full of people and you just saw him shoot his way through about 50 guys and there's hundreds more behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just this great reveal. And, you know, he manages to sneak right past them and they don't even realize it. So that's why you're like, oh my God, he's going to get away with
this. He's going to do it. He's going to get out. And he has to take the mask off. And one of the other cops looks him right in the face and doesn't even click for him. There's no,
none
it's
of
like,
them
of course,
have this seen
is
him.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't know who this guy is. They just know he's a guy in that room.
Yeah. it's such a thrilling moment. And like, you know, this movie's been around for, I hate to say it, but like almost 30 years. And I know. I was going, like, when I said that, my mind like instantly flashed back to the VA. Like, I had this movie twice on VHS.
Nice.
I had the old, like, so it's a Columbia TriStar movie. And Columbia TriStar, when they released movies on home video, they did pan and scan where it's like they moved.
Oh, gross.
The picture. Yeah. Yeah.
Something terrible. So abhorrent it doesn't exist anymore. Like, it is an abomination.
Yeah.
And to filmmakers everywhere.
Yep. And this movie and Multiplicity were two of the ones where I was just like, if I ever have to watch a pan and scan movie again, I might go crazy. But then they released this movie on a letterboxed VHS. And I was just like, oh, finally.
Finally, I can see it all.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, I just flashed back to that. And it's like, this movie is old enough where I've had two different versions of it on VHS. But there's still that part of me that is hoping that he's going to make it out. I know he's not. I know he's not. The movie can't change, but you just feel so elated once he gets to that point where it's like he made it down the stairs.
Sunlight. It's right there. He's so close. He just shot and beat his way through so many people. And, you know, you think, if he can get through that, and then he, you know, does a bait and switch and he puts on the one of the guy's masks and uniforms and just waves his hand and gets carried to freedom past everybody. And you're like, oh my gosh, the unbeatable odds, he's going to beat him.
He's going to do it. He's going to do it.
Yeah, it's devastating.
Yeah, just... Man, I want to talk about one thing I do want to talk about, and it's the hot button issue of the movie. I don't know if you know what I'm getting at here.
Yes.
So the relationship between Leon and Matilda, I think, especially watching the U.S. theatrical cut, where I know that they've trimmed so much of it down, it feels like to me she's a girl who develops a crush and is very, you know, loud about it,
aggressive
about it, and I feel like he is looking at it more as like a kind of grows into it as like a father-daughter relationship, like that's how it grows for him. At first he's, you know, hands off, like just like has her in his care because he has to, but he comes to love her in a father-daughter relationship. And I think the theatrical cut of that does a really good job of trying to clarify that. But yes. I think there are moments where it can fall into that gray area that could be a little uncomfortable. Am I wrong in thinking that? Or is that something that you've gleaned from it too?
Yeah. So I completely know what you're talking about. And that's the main difference between the director's cut and the US cut is all of that, where she is a very young girl, not a woman, a girl, making what are advances to this very much older man. Now, watching this time, I tried to remember that and be really paying attention to it. And for me, the way I kind of landed on it is just, again, first of all, this is made by a European filmmaker.
Yeah.
And Europeans are a lot more freewheeling and less uptight than Americans. So the fact that Americans immediately go to like the worst possible conclusion does not surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah.
But I touched on it earlier. She has a terrible home life. Terrible. And what I think it boils down to is she's never been loved. She just doesn't know what, and she's never loved anybody except her little brother. And when you don't know what love actually feels like, you're bound to misinterpret what kind of love you're feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how I always took this movie. I get the people who are really, you know, there's a lot of over-sexualization of a preteen.
Yeah.
And I know even Natalie Portman has come out and said she felt that way. And it's hard to defend. Like I get both sides of this argument. But I think you're right. The American version especially really hones in on he is this kind of not, I don't know if you call him kind of a simple-minded guy. Like he can barely read.
Yeah.
He just sort of does what he's told. And he's, again, another person who has never really been loved. He gives in the edited version a backstory to why he is like this. And he was in love with a woman and her father disapproved and they killed her. And he came to America because he got revenge.
Yeah.
And that's the only time he's ever loved anybody. You don't get any of that in the American cut.
Right.
So you kind of have to just fill in some gaps.
Yeah,
but you're right. It's more fatherly, where he doesn't need this little girl in his life. He is very hesitant to open that door when she's frantically ringing the doorbell because she doesn't know what else to do. She's about to die in the hallway in front of him.
Yeah.
And he's about to let it happen.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they are bound together.
Right. Right.
And from there, it's just developing, like, how do we do this? Like, I don't want to teach you how to do things. Get out of here. But at the same time, he's like, I have a pig in the kitchen.
Hello, like, Matilda.
Trying to be like, really make friends with her and make her feel okay about this real shit situation next door.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah,
and he just doesn't know how. He has no comprehension of how to interact with another human being.
Because, and she doesn't know how to receive it.
Yeah, yeah. Everything he does in his life is transactional. It's give me my job. I'm going to do my job. Give me my, or not even give me my money. Because that was the other thing I noticed this time. Danny Aiello is holding on to his money the whole time. I think Danny Aiello is screwing him out of this money.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's like, no. I'm going to keep your money. I'm better than a bank because banks don't get knocked over. Banks get knocked over.
Oh,
you need some money? Here's some money. Yeah, he's definitely getting screwed in that relationship.
But like, you know, all of his relationships are just very straightforward. And now here's this opportunity where he's like, okay, I've seen this girl in this scary situation. How do I do this? How do I take care of her? How do I calm her down? Oh, got it. I've got a pig oven mitt. Let's do something with that. And she has no idea how to respond. And who would, especially if you've gone through that terrible traumatic experience, how do you respond? But yeah, I just think their relationship just grows into something that's just great. Like, I love the relationship that they have.
She challenges him and he is surprised by like how strong she actually is, like emotionally. But in those moments where like they play the game together, where they're dressing up and he doesn't know who anybody is, but she's just playing, you know, playing dress up and being a kid.
Yeah.
And she's having a great time. And then he finally gets one right and he's very excited about it. You know, they're on an even plane at different points in the movie where, like in that scene, they're on the same level.
Yep. Yep. Oh, it's such a nice moment too. Like when the music swells, when he knows that it's Gene Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
So nice. Like such a fun little minute. Any other parts of this movie that you want to make sure we discuss before we kind of wrap things up here? I feel like I could just go on and say, I love this movie. I love this movie. I love this movie. But any particular things you want to shout out?
No, I mean, mostly just, you know, this is at times this feels like a very 90s kind of a movie, like the way it's scored with the music.
Yeah.
It's that kind of 80s action movie that has bled into the 90s sort of electronic score. Right. But it's great. And the tension building in those moments in between, there are moments where nothing happens, but you're on the edge of your seat. And then there's like a reveal and it's funny that you're just so relieved that you laugh. Like the jogger in the park, he's got this little girl on a rooftop with what looks like a high power rifle.
Yep.
And they're watching this guy and they're tracking him and the music is building and the tension is building. And then he says, okay, and now take a breath. And then when you release your breath, fire, and she fires the gun and this guy gets hit by a paint gun and all the bodyguards just start attacking him. And it's the funniest scene. And then they just pack up like nothing happened and they're like, okay, we got to go now.
Let's go.
So there's so many of these moments of like real tension and then real humor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no action. Like you said, in between, nothing. It's all just them getting to know each other and figuring each other out and falling in love in the way that they both need.
Right. Right.
It's such a good movie.
I love this movie. I love this movie so much. Betsy, this has been a ton of fun talking with you about life, about this movie. We're not out of the woods yet, though. I have my last section of the show, which I like to call the Fat Five. These are five rapid-fire-ish questions that are just kind of a general gauge of your personal love for movies. So are you ready for the Fat Five?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Question number one. This is the one that people hate. What is your favorite movie of all time?
I honestly do not have a specific answer for this. And people, when they find out I love movies, they always are like, well, you must have one. I really don't, because movies in general are just so good. There's like, this one is great. Like, if you ask me today, right now, it's this movie. Yeah. It's Layout. But, you know, I usually just defer back to the ones that I have seen so many times. I know the dialogue. So today, my answer for you is the cinematic classic from 1995. It is The Mummy. Ooh. I have seen that movie to the point I know the dialogue. Like, if you just want to do an episode where I just... recite The Mummy, I could probably do 85% of it flawlessly. Sure.
Listen, I feel like in the Brendan Fraser Renaissance, this is a perfect answer. So
I love him so much. 90s Brendan Fraser makes me swoon. That movie makes me swoon. And to see him right now getting these accolades is making my little 90s heart so happy.
It's so great. Like, it's so amazing to kind of see the personality of people come out, like, when like the good side of their personality come out when they're
he's
being
a big,
like,
teddy bear. Yeah. I want to just squeeze him.
Right? Him and
it's so
and,
sweet.
Ki Hui Kwan from Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like, the two of them, I'm just like, can I like just be friends with you guys?
Can you be my dad? Like, I want to hold. I just want to like eat ice cream with you and like watch a movie.
I'm loving this award season for no other reason than to just watch the two of them be happy. Like, just so great. Question number two is a two-parter. The first part is, who is your favorite actor, your favorite male performer?
So again, I knew you were going to ask these questions, but I have listened to your podcast and I had to think about this one because I was considering someone and then of late, because I have been seeing them around more. Not to jump, sound like a bandwagoner, you can reference our podcast 2 years ago. I was talking about this person. Yeah. I think it has come into sharp light. My favorite actor is Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
Like, he has just been out there for 20 some years and he has been doing such a variety of projects, and he is just this great comedic actor and character actor. He can sing. He is, by all accounts, as a human, just charming and funny and really nice to wait staff. So that's those are all pluses. And just to see him, like, again in the conversation about Oscars this year, I love that for him. I'm so excited.
He's another one too, where it's like, it's just like getting to see that part of his personality come out, because I know, you know, early on in his career, he had this reputation of being something else. But now
he
it's
was
like
in a little box, like, I'm a good looking young guy who's going to make good looking young guy movies.
Right. But he is like, he has changed into this actor that I always find interesting, like just a ton of fun to watch. And I'll see anything he does.
I forget he's in The Batman. I forget that's him.
Right? What a year for him. Like, just like he had The Batman, Banshees of Inisherin, and After Yang. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I haven't, but I keep now hearing about it. I'm going to have to go seek it out.
Yeah, wonderful. If you, it is a slow, you know, very slow sci-fi movie, but it's not, the reliance isn't on the reliance isn't so much on the science fiction as it is the characters and the story that they're telling. But I highly recommend it. Highly recommend that movie. That leaves the second part of that question. Who is your favorite actress, your favorite female performer?
again, I had to think about this one.
Yeah.
The answer I have decided on is Amy Adams.
Ooh, good choice.
Because good choice. Again, just range. She has the capacity to play these insane over the top characters. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I saw her in like Arrival.
Yes.
And I'm sobbing like the second before you finally figure out what's going on in this movie. And she's giving you everything she's got. And I am bawling.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just love anyone with her kind of range, with Colin Farrell's kind of range, where it's just like one person might be able to do that kind of movie, but they can't do the opposite. Like if they switched roles, that doesn't always work. Amy Adams is one of those people. It's like, do you want to see her in like a noir drama? Here she is. Do you want to see her in a musical playing a princess? Here she is. Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's just great. I love her.
Yeah. I know that we already talked about La La Land, and as much as I, loved Emma Stone in La La Land, I did, I can't help it. I would have been equally thrilled if Amy Adams would have won for Arrival, would have even been nominated for Arrival. Yeah,
let's not crack that
egg. That's egregious. Egregious. Yeah, just a terrible mistake that the Academy made. Moving on. Question three. Is there a director that if they had a movie coming out tomorrow, you wouldn't have to know the cast, wouldn't have to know the story, wouldn't really have to even see a trailer or know anything about it, but you would just know that they are directing it? Which director's movie would you want to see?
Again, there's a lot of them, but one that jumped into my head just now as you were asking that is the director of Arrival, Denis Villeneuve. Yeah. He is just, as I've been exploring more of his movies that I kind of missed, we watched Prisoners last year. That movie's incredible. I cannot believe I sat on that for as many years as I did. Dune, I didn't think I would like Dune. I thought that was going to be weird. It was my second movie last year. It was like number two or number three. It was like way up there.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and he just has an understanding and of these really complex ideas and they're beautiful. The movies are like Prisoners is dark, but a beautifully shot movie. So I would say if there's anybody that I've recently kind of latched onto, it would be that guy.
Awesome choice. Yeah. I completely agree. Anytime I find out there's something that he has something new coming out, you can count on me being there. Yeah. Great choice. Question number four. Is there a movie coming out that you are super excited to see, or a movie that you haven't seen yet that's already out that as soon as you get a chance, you're wanting to get watched?
Oh, I'm trying to think of what I haven't watched recently. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of those that are kind of winning for acting.
Yeah.
But you know, have a different kind of buzz as far as the overall movie. Like Tar, I haven't seen that. The Whale, I'm desperately curious to see Brendan Fraser and that overall performance. And I've also just heard other people in the movie are amazing. The Menu, I would say if anything this week, The Menu, I've had so many people around me talking about that movie. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to wait much longer. I think we're going to need to get on that because otherwise I think somebody's going to let some beans spill and I'm going to have missed the boat.
highly recommend The Menu. Just a ton of fun. And with it being on HBO Max,
I don't have a lot of excuse.
Right. good choices though. The Whale is one of mine too. I'm excited for it to come to the state here in a couple of weeks. Question number five, last question. The name of the show is Let's Talk About. I review my movies using the taco scale. So Betsy, I want you to craft for me your perfect taco.
Oh, you know, when I make them at home, they're pretty simple. Just, you know, the crunchy taco, beef, cheese, some sour cream. But if I go to a restaurant, I usually order the fish tacos, if I'm being real. That was one of those later life experiences for me where I'm like, wait, you can put fish on a taco? And then I tried it and I was like, this is delightful.
Yeah.
So now I try to go around and see who's got them and order that. Find out who's got the good ones in town.
Have you had, and this is like, you live in Sioux Falls, so I don't feel like this is some like big, huge discovery here, but have you had the wet shrimp burrito from Jackie's?
No.
Okay. This is the most delicious burrito in town. Like I love this burrito. It is a burrito, and it has shrimp, cheese, rice, I think maybe some beans in it, and it's topped with like this creamy sauce that is just incredible.
You want to turn this into a food podcast? Because we just start talking about that now.
I know, right? Right? But yeah, I highly recommend anytime you get a chance, stop at Jackie's, get that burrito. Hopefully you will not be disappointed because they season the shrimp so perfectly. So it's just, yeah.
I need to go get a snack now.
Chef's kiss. Yeah, I haven't had dinner yet. So that's where I'm going next. So, well, Betsy, this has just been just a ton of fun. Like, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. Where can people find you and your podcast online?
Yeah, so Never Seen It Pod. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter, Gorm_Betsy. On Twitter, it's Never Seen It Pod 1. I had to practice this because Trent used to do the social media announcement, and I only recently started. Never Seen It Pod 1, Facebook and Instagram, Never Seen It_Pod for Twitter. There we go. I'll figure it out. But if you look it up, and then, the podcast is just anywhere you can find podcasts. We've put it on all the services. Otherwise, you can find me on stage at Goodnight Theater.
Again, Betsy, just thank you. This has been a ton of fun. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'll look forward to having both of you back where you guys bring the movie. You tell me what movie we're watching, and it'll be exciting to chat.
We're having an ongoing debate about that because I have about 1,000 and he is much pickier than me.
So what you do is you make the big list and he'll have to narrow it down to the short list.
We're going
to
play 5-3-1.
Betsy, again, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Once again, a huge, huge thank you to Betsy Gorham for joining me on this episode. Man, like, it's always, I just enjoy meeting new people, and like, it's even better when they're just super cool and easy to have a chat with. Like, this was just a blast. So again, a huge thank you to Betsy. Make sure you check out her podcast with her husband, Never Seen It. I'm looking forward to, whatever they have coming up soon. And I'm excited to have them both on the show together just to kind of see their repartee at play. But again, thank you so much, Betsy. It was great getting a chance to chat with you. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Please feel free to follow all things Fat Dude Digs Flicks. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, YouTube, TikTok, all of the social medias. All you're going to want to do is just do a search for Fat Dude Digs Flicks and you will find me there. I'm toying with the notion of getting rid of TikTok. Like, I'm 41 years old. Not insulting people that are older than me who were TikToking and being successful. But, my girlfriend made a valid point, and I'm kind of like, maybe I shouldn't have TikTok. So I might get rid of TikTok. We'll see. But for now, definitely follow those other social medias. Subscribe to the podcast. You can do so on places like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Amazon Music, anywhere you get your pods. If you use Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave a rating or a review. I am going to keep doing this podcast, whether there are 3 people listening or 300 people listening, as long as I'm having a good time. And right now, the good time train keeps on chugging along. So, please, I'd love to get this out there to more people. So if you would like to share this with your friends, please do so. If you know a movie lover, let them know that we're out here doing our thing. If you do subscribe to this podcast, not only do you get Let's Talk About, but you will also get episodes of The Criterion Break, where I am joined by Blake Ginnethan and Derek Vierink, and we dive into our love for the Criterion Collection proper and the Criterion Channel. And that's what you're going to get next week, another Criterion Break, as we wrap up the movies you should see with the last movie and a bonus movie. Hell yeah. So that'll be a lot of fun, so you'll want to be back here next week to check that out. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, please send an email to fatdudediggsflicks@gmail.com. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, if you'd like to recommend a movie to cover, please, please, please send me an email. I would love to have a conversation with you. If you are in the Sioux Falls or South Dakota area and you're looking to meet some movie-loving friends, go on to Facebook and join the South Dakota Film Community Group. Always great conversations going on there. Check out a movie at the State Theater here in beautiful downtown Sioux Falls, South Dakota. That is the gem in the crown that is the downtown area. I think that's it. I think that's all I got. So I think that's going to do it. So, again, you'll want to be back here next week. Same fat time. Same fat channel. And let's talk about movies. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful week. Be safe. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Fat Dude Digs Flicks.